morning, members. I'd like to call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. First order of business is the minutes from March 23rd. Representative Heintzman, thank you, Representative Heintzman. Any questions or concerns about the minutes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. We're going to start out today. Representative Backer is here. And we've got House File 2664. I'll move that. I think our intention is to lay it over. So with that, Representative Backer, would you start your testimony, please? Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Chair Fabian and committee. Thank you for allowing us to present this in front of your committee today. House File 2664 deals with a permit request for Big Lake, which is in Grant County. It's not as far west as Browns Valley, but it's getting close. The challenge that we have with the current feet before freezing, what the bill does is it maintains the lake level at 1,073 feet from May 1st to October 1st, but draws it down prior to freezing by one more feet. That they call it a big lake, but it's really a big pond. Okay, I don't know how they ever got that name, but it is a pond. And the challenge that we have is when out there where our land is extremely flat, when we have the runoff with snow, we're seeing flooding in the city of Herman and then the adjacent area. So that permit would be given to the Boise Sioux Watershed District. And with that said, Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Alan Wold, who is the director, manager on the Boise Sioux Watershed District.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Mr. Wold, proceed.
Welcome. I'm Alan Wold from Wheaton, Minnesota. I'm a manager and treasurer of the Boise Sioux Watershed. And Jeff has given a good introduction. And if you look at the map, you will see there is a little, there's Big Lake, and at the left-hand side, there's a pipe that goes down into a ditch. It says proposed 24-inch HDDP pipe. And we have worked with the DNR, according to members who have been on the watershed longer than I have, for almost 10 years, to simply allow the lake to be lowered. The DNR has... The DNR has proposed a higher elevation, but it is not significant enough for flood reduction to make it worth the effort of the Boise Sioux to put the money into it. The DNR has admitted that the lake the way it is not fit for man or beast, meaning it serves no useful purpose to people, to the city of Herman, and it's too shallow a lake for any fish, and it's too deep for any vegetative growth along the shoreline that shore birds and migratory birds like to feed in. If we have the lake lowered the way we wish during the spring, we will have water storage that will help immensely for the flood reduction for Herman and for the surrounding farmland. And also during the summer, we will have more storage capacity. There is very strong local support for this. The landowner on whose that ditch lies, where the pipe would be, is very much in support of it. And you may ask, how do you control the floods? There's a flood control structure, and I have a model of what it would look like. The water will go in on one pipe, and if we want to lower it, all we do is pull up a stop log or a stop board, and that will just lower the lake. Very simple. No electricity, no computer, no nothing. It's simplicity itself, and we can set the lake level at various levels depending on how many boards we put in there. That's much smaller than the working one, but it's very easy to maintain. As far as the level, that's a simple GPS. The engineers can handle that.
And Mr. Wold, I would bet that there are some Fabians in the Herman area that would be happy to move those stop logs for you once in a while.
It's under lock and key. They might be happy to do that, but that's not their jurisdiction. That's the board's duty. Thank you.
That's why I said help. Anything else then, Mr. Wolf?
It's a rather simple request, and the reason is here because the DNR has not given us, with Representative Backer and Senator Westrom were at a meeting, and they could not give a solid answer why they would not move to the elevation that our engineers have come up with. And that's when Senator Westrom said, we might have to lower it by statute. That's why we're here today.
Mr. Wold, I do have one question about the map. Just off the corner of Big Lake?
Yes.
Right here? What is that parcel of property that's kind of light on this map?
That is a farm place.
Okay, very good. I thought maybe the cemetery must be another mile north.
Pardon me?
Isn't there a cemetery in that area that's another mile north?
Not
possibly.
Well,
anyway, we'll move on.
Okay. I will make one other comment. You see the proposed flood elevation. If we have this, the elevation we want, we won't ever use the 100-year natural flood elevation because we can control the lake. Right now it's uncontrolled. It doesn't work for anything.
Any questions from committee members? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the DNR here this morning?
I believe they are, yes.
And would they care to respond?
Yeah. That would. Okay. So you're telling us that the DNR hasn't been listening to the local people. Okay, thank you.
The DNR has been listening. We've had several meetings with them.
Okay, somebody from DNR. Who's coming down to testify from DNR? We've got a couple of different names on the list here. Good morning, gentlemen. Have a seat, and please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Okay. Good morning, Chair, members. My name is Steve Colvin. I'm Deputy Director for our Division of Ecological and Water Resources.
And good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Paul Thielander, Wildlife Section Chief for DNR.
Proceed, gentlemen.
Yeah, I'll do a few opening comments. Big Lake is a project that we as a section of wildlife have had an interest in for some time. As Mr. Wold stated, there was a project team assembled in the watershed to work jointly with the watershed and DNR and others to come up with a project to manage Big Lake. To date, there's been very little meeting to discuss this project specifically. One of the concerns we have with the proposed water elevation of 1073.0 is that there's going to be too much bounce during the nesting season. And this area right east of Herman has one of the highest duck breeding pair densities in the state of Minnesota, so we're very concerned about making sure we manage the lake with adequate natural resource values. We like I said, have a project team in place. We'd like that team to meet and identify some of the issues with this lake and formulate a plan going forward. Another issue that's not been met yet that we, as far as we know, was securing an outlet site for a water control structure. There's been issues with that, and unless the district has some new information on that, we're of the opinion that that still has not been secured and would prevent a project from moving ahead. So those are some of our concerns, I guess, and I could also stand for questions, and then Steve, you may have some things as well.
Mr. Colvin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll talk a little bit about the permitting sequence status and what some of the permitting-related issues are. We have been in discussions with the Bois de Sioux Watershed District since roughly 2011 about a potential project. An application was submitted in 2013. Application number is 2014-0813. The Bois de Sioux Watershed District agreed to have an interagency team put together to work through issues related to the permit. The team has met some. You've heard some of the issues that wildlife in particular has. We have some additional issues related to we really need complete engineering specifications and details
particularly for dam safety review, so that we can ensure that the outlet structure, once built, will be protective of downstream issues. We also share wildlife's concerns about ensuring that any project is beneficial both for flood protection but also for wildlife. And then we're also concerned about the there are a few residences around the lake, and we do want to make sure that their property rights are appropriately considered in the action. We were asked to hold off on issuing the permits, and in fact in our permit file there's an email from the watershed district asking us to hold on while they were trying to secure an alternative funding source. I believe they were looking for some federal funding for this.
What was the date of that?
Oh, I'll have to get that back to you. I think it was in 2014, but I will get that email and get it back to the representative.
Thank you. Proceed.
And as I said, we also need more complete engineering details in order to proceed with permit processing. The our hydrologist, our area hydrologist who manages the permitting, has not heard from the watershed district since the public meeting in early 2015. So the permit file is open and active. It's in abeyance right now so that the watershed district does not lose their $1,000 permit fee when they are ready to pick it up and continue.
Questions from the committee? Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to either of the testifiers, I'm wondering, does DNR consider the flooding and of the road and other issues that were described earlier? And as a former watershed district manager, I sympathize. Has DNR considered this an issue that should be actionable?
Mr. Colvin.
Thank you. Chair, representative, yes, we do consider flood damage reduction projects. And in fact, up in the Red River Basin, we have a basin-wide coordinator who works with several of the watershed districts, all of the watershed districts, really, to help coordinate these flood damage reduction projects.
Representative Heintzman, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, to either of the testifiers, if it is something that DNR considers actionable, at what point maybe did we come to that conclusion, and why didn't DNR move on it a long time ago?
Mr. Colvin.
Mr. Chair, representative, we need to have a complete application. We need to have the detailed specifications and engineering for the outlet. We need to know that they have an outlet site under their control. We need a review. We also need to know if property or if flow easements or something are going to be needed from the adjacent landowners. We have to know if the adjacent landowners are in favor of the project. These are all things that are in our rules, and the project also has to demonstrate some wildlife benefits.
Representative Heintzman, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since 2011, I think we heard the testimony, this has been on the radar. Has DNR been moving on any of those specific expectations?
Mr. Colvin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representative. We have been working as members of that interagency group to look not only at Big Lake and consider Big Lake in the Big Lake project for storage, but we've also been working with the watershed district to identify other potential storage projects in the Nemaha watershed. We also had offered in early 2014 an alternative to the original watershed district proposal that would have improved storage over the initial DNR recommendation and fallen a little bit short in the storage that the watershed district was seeking.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in other words, what I'm hearing is that you're somewhat clear on, it sounded like, between 5 and 6 different actions that are necessary before this project can move forward, but nothing has happened.
Mr. Colvin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we need information from the watershed district. We can't produce that ourselves, and we need that information from them, and we need their clearance to proceed before we can proceed into permit decision-making. In addition, the watershed district is the lead for the interagency work group, and we'd welcome an opportunity to, if the work group is reconvened, to continue to work with the Boyd Gibson Watershed District.
Representative Heintzman.
One follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You can have two if you want.
Oh, thank you. In Crow Wing County, we have a watershed district. It represents 7% of the entire county. In areas like Crow Wing or other cities around the state of Minnesota that don't have a watershed district, it sounds like without one, DNR doesn't consider moving and acting on their own. And in this case, why hasn't that been happening in all that onerous has been placed on the watershed district to act? Is DNR not in a position to do anything and to move this process forward on their own?
Mr. Colvin.
Thank you, Chair, Representative. DNR is not a watershed management entity. We are a water regulator, and so we don't typically initiate a watershed management project. We participate, provide technical guidance quite often on projects done by local governments, on projects done by watershed districts, counties, but we don't have the authority or the funding capacity to do a lot of these projects ourselves. So we take on more of a consultative role.
Mr. Thielander.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, I was going to add, too, that in June of 2014, some of the DNR staff met with the Bois de Sioux Watershed District and had a discussion on what the DNR's interests are in Big Lake, and there was a unanimous agreement by the Watershed Board to go ahead through the project team process to work through the issues identified with Big Lake and come out to a plan for Big Lake. And to date, that there's been very little meeting since that meeting took place. There's been a couple of meetings on the Five Creek watershed, which includes Big Lake, but very little discussion on Big Lake to date. So I think that needs to happen yet, and that could develop into a project that could help something move forward here that would protect the city of Herman and still provide natural resource values for the lake.
More questions?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But sounds like what we have here is a failure to communicate between people. And then an overreaction by having a statute brought before us and brought here. Mr. Thielander, have we ever, has the state, have we ever done this by statute where we actually set a permit level for a lake, for an individual lake, and an elevation level? Has that been done before, or is this the first time?
Chief Thielander.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would defer to Mr. Colvin here. He's got more expertise in that area than I do.
Mr. Colvin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will say not to my knowledge, but I have a relatively short history in this area, so I cannot say with certainty.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
So I can understand the frustration, you know, maybe it's frustration on all sides, and I would encourage the parties to talk with each other and see if they can resolve it. But I, Mr. Chair, I'm very concerned about going down this road and setting this type of prescriptive level in law. I think I could see that happening again. Oh, Representative Fisher, you may want to do that with White Bear Lake. Somebody else may want to do it. Uglem, have you got a lake that you want a certain level set at?
No lakes in Champlain. Just a mill pond.
A pond? Well, you set the precedent for a lake, you might be able to do it for a pond. I mean, I think we should be very cautious about this. And I would encourage folks to talk with each other and see how they can work out their differences. But I can't support passing this bill forward because I think it sets a big precedent.
Thank you. Well, you know, I will say that this is a recurring theme in this committee this week and around the Capitol with the DNR not being, I'll say, a very good neighbor and working with people. We've heard that in a number of issues. And, you know, when I listen to stuff like this, the word that comes to mind for me is frustration. And Representative Hansen talked about that. You know, when I listen to Mr. Colvin and I just hear a whole lot of bureaucratic gobbledygook, and we just need to move some of these projects forward, and you need to be better neighbors, and you need to take some actions that actually helps to solve a problem. As Representative Heintzman spoke about, you had 5 or 6 different actions. You were talking about the neighbors on the lake and so forth. Well, what conversations has DNR specifically had with those neighbors? What actions have you taken to actually move forward on some of these things? You deny the permit, or not deny, but you don't issue the permit, but at the same time, you don't seem to be very proactive and willing to solve some of these issues. So Representative Neuberger is next on the list, but I want to make sure that you mentioned the Red River Basin in this. I want Mr. Harnack to come down and Mr. Colvin to come back to the table, and let's see if we can't move something forward here for these people. Representative Neuberger, is it a question of DNR, or?
This is... yeah, I do have a question for the DNR. I would like to get their input on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This lake here in Grand County, Big Lake, I am very familiar with this, and I'm also I also have strong ties to this the small town of Herman. I've spent a lot of time in that town.
I do too. My Uncle Ray used to be the mayor there. So
really, well. Small world. That's the town where my dad grew up in, and if you look at the map, 3 blocks down, 2 blocks up, that's Grandma Neuberger's old house. Anyway, point being is I'm very familiar with Big Lake. I'm very familiar with the stretch of road, and I do know that as a kid and as a young adult growing up, that this road would flood periodically. And I do know that, as we know, that roads tend to be magnets for all kinds of substances that we don't want to have washed into our lakes, whether it be de-icing chemicals or salt or whatever it is that comes off of our cars. This is also a very heavily used agriculture road as well, so we've got that component as well. I also know that Big Lake is beautiful as far as its avian and its waterfowl populations. There's the bird population on that lake is nice. I believe there's a good population of cranes as well. The concern that I have here, and my concern for the DNR is that I see this as a wildlife preservation move. If we can do everything we can on our part to keep the levels down from flooding over the roads and preventing the wash of those chemicals and whatever detritus that you would have from the roads washing into this water, that we're taking a pretty simple step towards protecting waterfowl and the wildlife the system of this lake. And I do know that from my feedback, I do know that the city of Herman, or the city, it's not a city, the town of Herman, I think the population is 714 if you include the cemetery. I do know this is something that the community wants, I would encourage that we support this. I guess my comment or my question to the DNR would be, if this is a simple step that we can take to prevent a very real problem, because if you look at the map, clearly there are three places on the eastern side, the western side, and on both on the southern side of the road where the water comes right up. I mean, we've got wash that doesn't take a whole lot of elevation rise to get water onto the road, and as we know that what happens there. So my comment to the DNR would be, if this is a relatively easy fix to prevent part of this problem, I don't see why you wouldn't support that. And then the second question/comment that I would have for the DNR is I really think that you should trust your watershed districts. They're doing good work there. And I think that we should, to echo what Representative Fabian was saying, that we should, that you should collaborate with them and move forward with this. Representative Hansen was concerned about, you know, some type of special, you know, carve-out's not the best word, but some type of special, you know, situation here and setting a trend. Well, sometimes we need to do that. If there's a problem staring you straight in the face, you deal with it. And this problem is staring you straight in the face. So therein lies my comments slash questions.
I think I'd like Mr. Harnack and Mr. Colvin to, or excuse me, Mr. Wold, I believe, to come down.
Mr. Wold and Chair and the representatives, a few of the questions I would like to address is, if you look at the map on the toward the bottom on the right-hand kind on the right-hand side, that's fish and wildlife property, and that's where the ducks do their nesting. Mm-hmm. There really isn't a lot of nesting going on in the actual big lake, so the bounce doesn't really matter. And unless we get the water level lowered, there won't be any vegetation for the shoreline birds to eat. That's why we want it lowered. And as far as the dam safety, when we've had meetings with the DNR, that was never brought up. We have North Ottawa in the Bois des Sioux, and we understand what dam permits are. We're building another impoundment, and we understand what the dam permits are. This was never mentioned. As for the question why we haven't had more meetings, we had meetings, and we left it in the DNR's hands. The ball is in their court, and they have not moved. And as far as never having forest permits before, it is my understanding that there has been two or three occasions where permits have been forced by the legislature to get things done. So this isn't new. The property that we're worried about protecting is already unprotected. We are seeking to protect it by lowering the water level. We're having flooding downstream 2 years ago that lost hundreds of acres of ground just because we had no place to put it. So two men here, with all due respect, were not at the local meeting, and I wouldn't have expected them to be, but I think I have the first-hand knowledge, and Representative Backer has first-hand knowledge because we were there. We do have a project team, and it has been going for a while, but until the DNR moves, there's no reason for us to meet and discuss what?
Thank you.
My comments.
Mr. Harnack, please.
Mr. Chairman and members, Ron Harnack, working with the Red River Watershed Management Board. And over the last number of years, we have put together a rather comprehensive approach to dealing with implementation of projects that not only provide flood damage reduction, but also provide a significant amount of environmental enhancements, both for water quality and habitat. We've worked a number of projects with DNR. And are they always easy? No. I mean, when you're faced with the issue of flood damage reduction and also habitat, sometimes those can conflict. And I think the important thing is that we try to work out ways in which to compromise where we're all in a win-win situation. I think Big Lake is like that. Big Lake is something that DNR and Ducks Unlimited a number of years ago tried to go in and develop a comprehensive plan, put a structure in that would have allowed for lowering of the lake and managing the lake to create more emergent vegetation. You know, the picture that you've got there is, if it was in color, it would show blue. The one I'm looking at a different part of the year is all green. And so it's a tweener lake. It's one of those that isn't good for ducks, it isn't good for fish, and it isn't good for overall water management. The project team, I think, has worked diligently to try to find some common ground. I don't think we're very far apart. But the Watershed District is not going to go out and spend tens of thousands of dollars to do final engineering and do all the other things until we can come to an agreement on a managed level. I've encouraged folks to look at getting this project in place, developing an interim management plan, and let's really look at what the impacts are when you have the bounce. is it really impacting waterfowl? What's the net gain? Because I can guarantee you on some other projects that have been constructed out there, we work with DNR in managing those pools to optimize the waterfowl outcomes while sustaining the benefits of flood reduction. We can do the same thing here. So I'm not a big advocate of having things established by statute. I'm more an advocate of saying we got to be responsible for managing our water resources, and we need to do it together if we're going to get these things done. The last time DNR tried to do this with DU, they said, we will not implement a project that results in condemnation. So they walked away from it. The city of Herman has basically asked the watershed district, if you have to use condemnation to get this thing done, they would encourage them to use it. The watershed district isn't interested in doing it either, but they got concurrence from the landowners. So
Mr. Wold, yep, speaking. The landowners along the lake and the corridor of the water,
yep,
are very much in favor of it. There would, condemnation wasn't even mentioned. They'd just be overjoyed to get it done.
And Mr. Chairman, one last comment. The application's been applied for, and if there cannot be a decision that's made in a reasonably successful time frame,
which is what?
I think they need to have another meeting and see if they can find agreement. If they can't, my perspective is DNR should grant it or deny it, and the district has the opportunity to go to a public hearing on it at that point. So there's processes that we need to work with. Let's get this project moving forward.
Thank you. I think that the message is pretty loud and clear here. Whoops, I'm sorry. Mr. Hansen. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Wold. I just want to recognize the work that Bois de Sioux has done. When we look at water management, you can't manage what you can't measure. And the work that you've done for recording of tiling and tracking the amount of drainage that goes on in your watershed district is very helpful. And I think you could be, if other watershed districts did that, they would have more data that we could use in decisions like this. So I'd again implore the DNR and the watershed district to use the resources they have to try to talk together and resolve this without doing a statute.
Thank you. We're going to lay this bill over,
yep,
and I want to see some heads nodding here that DNR and the local watershed, the Bois de Sioux watershed, is going to get together at this meeting when you're down at this table and come up with a plan, and I'd like to find out what that plan is. So with that, I'm going to lay the bill over.
One quick comment.
Representative Backer.
Just real quick. One of the reasons we did this is when we did have the meeting, basically the regional DNR said, no. And we had to, Senator Western and I said, we got to do something for our constituents to move this forward. And this is why we are here today. That's my final comment.
And you're doing great work for your constituents, and keep it up. And with that, we'll lay this bill over. Next, we have House File 2616. Representative Backer, welcome.
And it's me and not my twin.
Oops. Representative Backer, yep. I think we're planning to lay this bill over as well.
Yep.
Proceed with your testimony.
Yes. Thank you, Chair, and again, members of the committee, appreciate your time and opportunity. The really focus on this bill, I'll be brief, is as a mayor of Browns Valley, school board member, and involved so much in my district, one of the challenges I continue here, my district has only 42 communities, okay? Only 42. I know several reps that only have one, is the unfunded mandate. We, at this bill, I am not arguing at all with what MCC wants to do with the water quality going into the Pomme de Terre. What we are facing is that continually in our small communities, we are required to do things we cannot fund. Currently, Morris is doing a fantastic job in handling what they're supposed to. This is an undue burden put on them. If they had to pay for this completely, it would, and you can correct me in your testimony, would double. Double the water rates in Morris. And Morris is my largest community that I represent, 5,200 and so forth. So all my other communities are significant. And if Morris can't do it with that type of population, Browns Valley at 580, Herman in the upper 400, Wheaton, these towns that are under 3,000, 2,001, do not have the resources. So, yes, our communities want to work with MPCA on this stuff, but we do not have the resources to do it when we say, hey, you need to do this or else. They're acting, they're putting our communities in a very difficult position. I've seen that as mayor of Browns Valley for many years, council members, and even on the school board level, that's a different issue. We are constantly being mandated at the local level, and I'll turn over to City Manager Blaine Hill.
Next up we have Mr. Hill. Identify yourself for the record and who you represent, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Blaine Hill. I'm the city manager for the city of Morris.
Welcome.
I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify in front of this committee. As I said, I'm the city manager in Morris, and I'm here on behalf of all the homes, businesses, and institutions in Morris to ask for support for this bill. The City of Morris received a new mandate as part of our MPCA sanitary sewer wastewater discharge permit, and that mandate was to reduce the chloride levels that were being discharged from our sewer ponds into the Pomniter River system, and we have until 2020 to do that. HF 2616 says that we should not be fined or penalized by the MPCA for violating this new level until the city has received state assistance to design and construct a new water treatment facility. What we did is we worked really closely with Commissioner Stein and the MPCA to figure out what the source of the chloride was and what the solution to the problem was. What we found was the source of the chloride is the water softener salt used in every home, business, and institution in Morris. It goes down the sewer, goes out to the pond, and then eventually gets discharged into the Pomniter River. We have some of the hardest water in the state of Minnesota, and you have a handout in your on the table that shows a picture of a pipe that doesn't look very nice. And what that is a pipe that comes from our well, one of our wells, that goes into the water treatment plant before we ever do anything with the water to make it available for people to utilize. Our water is hard. It's very hard. This water could not legally be put into the Pomniter River directly from the well. The solution we found was not at the sanitary sewer wastewater plant or the ponds, but at the treatment plant. With the help of the MPCA, we determined that a new water treatment plant at a cost of about $14 million would be the most efficient and economical solution to getting the salt out of the Morris sanitary sewer system and going into the Pomniter River. We also have a bill that has been entered into the House to provide us funding for this water treatment plant at a level of $11,495,000, and this was the original estimate of the plant when we first started looking at this. That cost has gone up now to $14 million. We are doing this because we have a water treatment plant. It's currently up and running. It has the most recent technology that was available when we did our last update to it, which was in 2002. And that was before any chloride standards were talked about at a local level. We're still paying on that most recent update to this plant. And we expect the useful life of this plant to be another 15 to 20 years. We are environmentally aware in Morris and understand the goal to clean up the rivers and streams and lakes. This is a regional effort. We want to play a part in it, but at what cost to us locally? We do not have the people or the financial resources to pay for this. And again, we're already paying for a water treatment plant. We know the governor supports assistance to cities like Morris and believe that when these mandates come forward, to change what we're currently doing, there should be funding to go with them. Morris is a community that is holding its own out on the prairie. We take pride in taking care of ourselves, but realize there's a high cost to some of these initiatives. This high cost could hurt our ability to continue holding our own. We think this is a new project, and it's good for the environment, good for us, but we need help to make it happen. One other note, the small city of Alberta, Minnesota, which is 6 miles away, is on our water system. They do not contribute to our wastewater problem, but they will have to pay the price for the new water plant too. They lost their own water system when their well went bad. They bought into the old plant that we currently have, and their rates reflect what their the actual processing part of the water and not the plant. So Representative Backer said our local citizens' average water rate will probably double. Theirs may go up as high as 5 times because of this new plant. I thank you for your consideration and your time, and would be happy to answer any questions that you might have about this.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. I don't see any questions. MPC is here. Ms. Gothier.
Thank
State your name for the record, please, Director. Who you represent?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Greta Gothier. I'm the Legislative Director at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Good morning.
Proceed, please.
Thank you for letting me have the opportunity to testify on this bill, House File 2616. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that is unusual in its format and not something folks at MPCA have seen before in the way that it's structured. So off the bat, I will say that we are concerned that it may set a bad precedent and therefore would oppose it. However, that said, Mr. Chairman, I would like to state that we are very aware of the chloride problem that the City of Morris has. We've been engaged with them from the highest level of our agency on down to work with them. We have a good working relationship. We have a good process going. They have a compliance schedule out to 2020. If there is a problem with them in meeting that compliance schedule at that time, we have other means that we can work to be flexible and help accommodate them as they make progress towards their goal, such as a variance would be one of those tools. We consider the City of Morris a strong and outstanding partner in working to clean up the Pomme de Terre River. And we also would oppose this bill because we feel the language is not necessary at this time. They have a compliance schedule. We are working very well with them on it. We are moving forward together. We have reason to believe that we can make this happen in a way that is workable and doable for the city. That said, also, I would just also say that in the listening sessions that the Commissioner of PCA, Commissioner Stein, and that Commissioner Ellinger from the Health Department and Mr. Freeman from the PFA had around the state last year, we had one that Morris attended in Wilmer, Minnesota. We discussed this situation, and out of those listening sessions came the governor's recommendation for $167 million in bonding to beef up the programs at the PFA that can provide grants to cities like Morris across the state so that they can get the proper equipment in place and do their part in water quality. So again, we support that $167 million, and we also support that the governor's language for that would increase the cap on one of those grants, the Point Source Implementation Grant, or PSIG, which is precisely the type of grant that would be used for a problem like this. The current cap on that is $3 million. With the language accompanying the $167 million recommendation, there is an increase on that cap to $7 million, which would, of course, make a big difference for a city like Morris and many other cities across the state. So we're very supportive of those efforts in combination with whatever flexibility and partnership that we can provide to help make this happen in Morris and other cities across the street. excuse me, across the state, Mr. Chairman. Clearly, I need more.
There are some across the street too.
Sorry.
It's been a long week.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. You know, last year we had sort of a parade of bills somewhat related to this that I think served to kind of gut the Clean Water Act in some some respects. And so now we have one that's basically, unless we get funding, you know, we're not going to comply. So my question for you, and maybe it could be for Mr. Hill as well, in that discussion we had last year, it seemed like there were some grants available outside of this bonding situation. There were grants, I think, at the state and federal level that were available, but some of these communities didn't take advantage of those, as I recall. So has Morris applied up till now for those grants? Are there options? And I agree that we ought to have this bonding, and I think we're all in agreement that that would be very helpful in this situation. But up until now, have you availed yourself of some of these other options that we learned about last year?
Mr. Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually last year there was legislation that was passed under the Point Source Grant Program. There's a $3 million cap, but that was strictly for wastewater plants. And so last year there's legislation that we helped bring to the legislature that allowed the use of that point source money for water treatment plants, because that's the problem, is at the plant. As far as I know, right now, we either have the $3 million grant or loans. That's the only programs that I'm aware of that we would be eligible for this water treatment plant.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful to know.
Representative Hornstein, I do, you know, you mentioned, you said something to the effect of gutting the Clean Water Act. And in this bill, they're not doing anything to change any standards.
Right. No,
just so you're clear on that.
Yeah, I am, Mr. Chair. It just reminded me of the conversation we had last year, and that was my interpretation. We had,
okay,
you know, different communities, you know, coming, and that was one approach to not this exact problem, but a similar problem. And so I think at the end of the day, we have to be very conscious that it's the water quality, it's the health impacts that deserve the attention and the focus, and putting those off for whatever reason is problematic.
Well, I remember Representative Rukavina was here too, and we were talking about $167 million and standards and trying to meet those and the amount of money that's required. Those of you that were here when Representative Rukavina was around knew what he had to say about that, but we'll move on. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Hill, I'm curious on a long-term basis going back, what the water quality for the city, has this hardness always been an issue that residents have to use a lot of water softener salt, or is it something that's been creeping up over time, the water getting harder and harder? Do you have any history on that?
Mr. Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, I think the answer is it's always been that way. That probably the biggest change in the entire process is the new technology with water softeners. And that's actually one of the first things I did when we found out that the chloride problem was coming from water softeners. I went and talked to the water softener companies and actually had one of them come over to my house, and I had an old water softener. And you had a choice of softening your water once every 6 days, twice every 6 days, but it automatically softened once every 6 days at a minimum. The new technology takes the hardness level of the water that you're provided from the city and only softens it from that point down to zero. And so that's actually part of this process that we're going to put into place local regulations that are going to mandate that you have that new technology in your water softeners, or you don't have one and you won't need one once the city's softening at the water plant. But the bottom line is it's always been that bad. You know, as far as I know, I grew up in Morris, So I know we've always had a water softener since I was a little kid.
Representative Purcell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that, thank you for speaking directly to that point, because that's something we're seeing in very other areas of the state. My personal experience is the same, that there are ways to get 100 times as efficient with the use of water softener salts. so you can solve some of that problem that way. I'm very confident. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hill, I want to congratulate Morris on the work they've been doing. I understand you're one of the leaders in water treatment and water quality around the state and working well with the PCA, kind of different than the discussion we just had on an earlier bill where the agencies seem to be in disagreement. But it sounds like the agency and Morris are working together here. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, absolutely. And, you know, this is surprising, a money issue, you know, that we're dealing with here. It really comes down to that. We actually had two college students that did an internship with us that studied water softeners, studied salt, studied chloride, and they pretty much nailed it, what's happening with the river. It was really interesting to see how close they got to really what the impact is on the Pamunkey River. But, you know, it's just one of these things. If we're building a new water treatment plant, because we need to build one, we're going to build it with the new standards, you know, that are going to be taken into consideration. It's just like somebody building a house today is going to build it with the new codes versus one that was built in the 50s. But, you know, this really comes down to a case of we know what the problem is, we know what the solution is, we're just trying to figure out the best way to fund this thing so we don't cripple our community and our ability to continue thriving, you know, where we're at right now. We're actually doing very well as a community out in the rural area. Our population's holding its own. Our biggest water user is the University of Minnesota Morris, and that's a very important employer in our community. And the one last thing I would note about this is we're talking about salt. This will reduce the amount of water that's used in households. It'll reduce the amount of energy that's used in households. So as we look at all the energy issues that we're working on in Morris, this is a really good thing for the environment. But it really comes down to money and trying to find the best possible solution to paying for this new plant that's going to provide that relief to the Pamunkey River.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hill, that I understand the need to pay for stuff, and that's a little bit of my concern here in terms of breaking the seal on starting to pay for these. So once we open that door for one community, then we're into for chloride treatment. If we pass this for one city, we're essentially passing it for all cities if we do it for one city, because we'll have set the precedent again. So I'm cautious about that. It sounded from Ms. Gauthier that you have time. You have other options on the table. Did the City of Morris, was there a resolution passed supporting this bill, or was there sometimes we have resolutions where, you know, a city will say we need this bill because we've exhausted all other options, but it appears there's other options that may be used here before we'd have to go to the step of statute.
Mr. Hill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, the City Council didn't pass a resolution supporting this. The City Council passed a resolution supporting seeking legislative help for the mandate that we're dealing with the chloride and water treatment. So this is part of the process that we're going through. But you have to keep in mind that when we started working on this probably 3 years ago, at least when it first started coming out. And so we went through a process with our engineers to figure out what's happening, working with the MPCA. Can we fix it at the sewer plant? The cost of doing it at a sewer plant, if you can do it at a sewer plant, is a lot more. And then looking at what do you do with the water treatment plant? It takes a long time, and I can tell you we've already started, completed, and we're going into a bid phase on this. It takes 2 years to build one of these plants from the time that you start. It takes a good year to do the development work on it. We had to front about $800,000 in design money because of the way the process is set up for getting funding. If we get funding from the PFA, we have to have a plan in place. We have to have it ready to go, and we have to We have to indicate that we have the ability to pay for it. And we've already had to reach out and do those kind of things on this plant because of the timing on this thing. It's a long process to get this in place. And that's why we're here now. I guess that's the best answer I can give you on that.
Thank you. Okay, just one real quick comment here. I think that this bill really also helps to highlight the merging of the financial resources that are needed to meet these new standards and the standards that are there. And members, we're going to have to continue wrestling with this issue for many, many, many years to come, long after I'm gone probably. But that being said, with that, Representative Backer, if you have a quick closing comment.
Yeah, Chair, Committee Member, that's the whole purpose of this bill is to begin this discussion. Morris and the communities in my district want to work with the state, but when we're given these unfunded mandates, it's hurting our residents out there. So thank you.
Well, the giant yellow highlight markers are out here on this bill. So with that, we'll lay this bill over, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep, I did.
What happens when you let a health teacher do what a landscaper can do? Just kidding. Is Representative Fabian up?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Fabian, that was a pot. I didn't really mean to be negative, Representative Fabian. It's early in the morning, I guess.
I'm good.
I know you are good. Representative Fabian, House File 3409. Representative Fabian would like to move that bill to be laid over. Representative Fabian, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, House File 3409, I do have an amendment that I'm not exactly sure how you want to proceed, if you want to do that right away, if you want to just talk about the bill first, Mr. Chair, and then we can do the amendment.
Representative Fabian, why don't we have PCA come down and explain the bill? Probably be good for folks to understand, and then we could adopt the amendment after they explain the bill, and maybe they can explain the bill in the context of the amendment at the same time, so we understand what's happening.
Mr. Chair,
welcome, Ms. Gauthier. If you want to introduce yourself for the record, Representative Fabian, you had a comment first.
I do, and some of you are going to be stunned by this. I probably am too. Hopefully, House Photography is not here. I'm working with MPCN still, so okay. It's a new alliance. It's kind of like the Fabian-Hornstein alliance that we tried to do last year, but it didn't work out.
Representative Fabian, we have another bill that's going to be a Fabian-Hornstein amendment or a bill, so that's actually a PCA bill too, potentially, on e-waste that we're hopefully going to have coming. Representative, yeah, there are some people. They're working to do it in a positive way, so we'll see how that goes. We figure if Representative Fabian's got a hold of it, it'll have to have a good result. Ms. Gauthier, back to the bill at hand, 3409.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for hearing this bill, House File 3409, Incentive for Voluntary Municipal Investment in Nutrient Treatment Technology. Mr. Chairman, the MPCA is happy to work with any member, but particularly with Representative Fabian on this bill.
I'm in trouble back home.
Savor the moment, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
In our listening sessions that I mentioned earlier today, that the Commissioner of Health and the PFA Executive Director and the Commissioner of MPCA held around the state last year, we heard, as you heard this morning, a lot of concern about communities needing to replace old water infrastructure. Remember that back in the 1970s and the 1980s, the federal government paid 75% of the cost of building this infrastructure. The state paid 15% at that time. So the local communities had to pay 10%. And now, you know, fast forward to year 2016, and the infrastructure is aged out, and the federal help is long gone, Mr. Chairman. So it's not uncommon to find communities around the state that need to update their infrastructure because Minnesotans expect clean water, but they are facing obstacles. So this bill is designed to put another tool in the toolbox to help communities accommodate the fiscal cost and plan for the upgrading of their wastewater and their wastewater infrastructure. Mr. Chairman, as you know, the agency and the EPA have approved a new water quality standard statewide for phosphorus. We finished working on that water quality standard in 2014, and the EPA approved it last year. As you know, wastewater permits that municipalities have are on a five-year cycle. So in our first 5 years now of cycling through and communities needing to understand and figure out how they're going to comply with this new phosphorus standard. The standard, again, is a statewide goal. The number that any municipal sewage treatment plant has to meet is going to depend on where they're situated on the landscape, what they're putting their effluent into. Is it the Mississippi River, the Pomme de Terre River, a lake, a fish, trout stream? And what's coming into their plant. Many cities across the state are, because their infrastructure is old, as you heard an example from the gentleman from Morris, many cities are going to have to build new construction in order to comply with the phosphorus water quality standard. Mr. Chairman, one of the concerns we heard on our listening sessions was that communities feel they don't know what's coming down the pike. So this bill is intended to get to that, because we all know that coming down the pike is a nitrogen water quality standard. Now, our agency is probably closer to seven years off from getting that in place, because we are waiting for new research to be peer-reviewed and published in scientific journals, because we only use peer-reviewed data. Once we get that data, we're going to have to calibrate it for Minnesota conditions, because a lot of the research has been done in the southern part of the United States, and it's much colder here. And so what we're saying with this bill is that if you, a city, are going to be building anyway to comply with the phosphorus standard, this is a voluntary option that you can build to comply with the upcoming nitrogen standard at the same time. There will be more money under the governor's recommendation. There will be more money available at PFA, and there will be a larger amount that a city can get to do this, as I said before, $7 million instead of $3 million. And if the city uses a technology called biological nutrient removal, and that refers to actually a suite of technologies that basically use microbes, little bugs, to eat the nutrients. The city uses that technology to remove both phosphorus and nitrogen, then we will know they are doing everything that technologically they can do. And that's a good thing for Minnesota, because it will start removing nitrogen from our lakes and streams before we even have a standard, because it's going to be done on a voluntary option. Now, cities that volunteer would still have to have a permit. And that's reflected in the language here. They would get that permit renewed every 5 years. They will have a number in that permit for nitrogen and for phosphorus. The phosphorus number is dictated by the phosphorus water quality standard. The nitrogen number will be site-specific. And it would be a situation where if a city opted to do this, so essentially they're spending more now, and if they put this in place, then we'll know they're doing the best they can do, and we won't need to come back, and the commissioner will be able to sign documents saying we will not give you a more stringent standard for nitrogen or phosphorus for the lifetime of that new equipment up to 20 years. So if a city voluntarily, essentially, takes on a nitrogen limit for their sewage plant, while they're taking on the phosphorus limit. Again, this is a unique point in time. Because of the new phosphorus limit, many cities are going to have to build. So we're thinking, well, if you're going to build for that, it costs to build more for nitrogen, but it's going to be cheaper than trying to build for nitrogen 5, 10, whatever, years down the road. Because we always know capital investments are cheaper now than they are in the future. And we know that if we can combine it with a phosphorus system, with a nitrogen system now, and use the best technology to remove both, we know that that city's doing the best that they can do. So I can go through the bill clause by clause, or I can just say that we have worked with, we have partners on this bill, the League of Cities, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities we have also worked with, and we have worked with the Minnesota Environmental Advocacy Group, MCEA, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Mr. Chairman, I still haven't had more coffee. And we have worked with them, and we have taken their suggestions and their refinements for this language. And we feel that this is in pretty good shape. And so with that, I will say that one more thing. We do put a sunset on the time in which cities can apply for this. So the sunset is whichever is earlier of two things, either 15 years or the day after the EPA approves a nitrate nitrogen aquatic life water quality standard that the MPCA would have created for Minnesota.
And that's
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's subdivision 3 on the second page of the bill, line 2.10 through 2.15 for members' information. I do also want to say that, you know, I think that this is a good starting point for this discussion. We are intending to lay the bill over. I think that there may be some things in the bill that we can work on. This is a voluntary basis. It's something, it's another tool that's being put in the drawer for municipalities to work with. It would impact only municipalities that have a mechanical system, not a pond system, to do these things. So, you know, there's some issues that we want to work through here as we move this language forward. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think we have a couple testifiers. I'm sorry, Representative Fabian.
I was going to say we could take some questions at this point, or if you want to do the amendment, we can do that too.
Representative Fabian, I think we have a couple testifiers. Ms. Waifel from the Coalition, Craig Johnson from the League, and there was another testifier from PCA, but Ms. Gauthier must have done such a fantastic job, there's no further need from PCA.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Chairman. We have another testifier that can speak in more detail if there are questions.
I don't think that's necessary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Waifel, please come forward. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Members, Elizabeth Waifel from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Welcome. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Fabian, for allowing me to speak on this proposal today. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, an organization of more than 85 cities from around the state, many of whom could participate in this proposal going forward, depending upon their system. Before I speak, I also want to thank the MPCA for both the listening sessions they did this summer that really that led to this proposal, and then the work they've done with us on the language for this proposal. Our cities play the role of stewards in many ways. We're the stewards of water with our wastewater treatment systems, trying to keep the water going into our rivers and lakes clean. They also serve as stewards of the financial and other resources of their citizens. Aging systems and increasing regulations means that it is more and more costly to play both of those important roles. That's one of the reasons why our cities are interested in this proposal. It would allow us to play both roles simultaneously. This proposal would allow our cities to take a serious step forward in their roles as stewards of waters by allowing them to adopt the best technology available with the help of the state. The regulatory certainty provided by this proposal also means that they can take this bold step forward without putting the financial future of their communities at risk. We'd like to thank the MPCA on the work they've done on this proposal. I'd like to point out that, you know, they provided this proposal to us, and I know that to other interested groups as well, have worked with us on a number of areas of concern and have been very open to working with us on those concerns, which we really appreciate. Representative Fabian has also been very open and he worked with us on addressing the concerns we've had. We do think this is an important proposal. I think that, you know, one thing that needs to get pointed out about it is that with this proposal, what it's basically allowing, you know, or what it's doing for the environment is it's having communities sort of step out ahead on the nitrogen issue when they're dealing with the phosphorus issue. So they're basically, the cities would be voluntarily treating for something that they're not required to do and might not be required to do, you know, for 7 years, a decade, or more. So there's a benefit there. And what that does then for those cities is provide them some sort of, you know, guarantee help so that they benefit from going ahead and putting those extra resources into taking care of that problem. And so we think it's a good win-win solution for all concerned. There are some more details we'd like to understand as we go forward, but as I've mentioned, the author and the MPCA have been very good about working through that with us. Our probably biggest remaining concern is what would happen if someone else, for example, the EPA on its own or under the threat of outside lawsuits, in the future tries to undo this. For example, if one of our cities were to enter into an agreement, build more than they were required to do, and then a few years down the road be required to upgrade the system at that point. We'd like to figure out what would happen in that situation. It's an important question that's not easily answered, and we're working with the author and the MPCA to try and resolve how that would be answered. But we really appreciate the hard work that's been put into this problem and look forward to working with everyone on this going forward.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the things that we can say here is the regulatory certainty that we are trying to create would be at the state level. That would also maybe be helpful if we could get our Washington delegation to maybe create some regulatory certainty in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Any questions? Next, I think Mr. Johnson. If you could identify yourself for the record, who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I will try not to repeat the things that you've already heard. Very much appreciate the efforts of both the author and the agency in bringing forward this initiative. Just to clarify particular reasons why we are supportive of this, one is that it's voluntary. This is a choice a community can make to decide they want to do more than is actually required right now. And in exchange for that, get some certainty that 5 years later they're not going to be told they have to do even more. That there's not a penalty for taking the chance of going beyond what the current regulations require them to do. And we feel that tied with the governor's funding initiative that increases the funding available to do these kinds of projects for these communities, that it makes a very nice balance and a way that communities can get some stability in what, as many of you have heard my testimony for years know, is our most common problem, that the regulations are a moving target and that we never know what 5 years from now our permit will require. And that this gives us a stability in that for the life of that piece of infrastructure that we think will be tremendously helpful as communities are looking at what they can afford to do and how they can afford to do it. So, Mr. Chair, we feel that this is an excellent way to do it, that we'll get better environmental benefits than we would get without this in place, and will help cities get the resources they need to get that done. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, and maybe even to the previous testifier or to the PCA. Again, as I've expressed earlier in this meeting and last year, I just want to make sure that nothing in this bill would provide for exemption federally. I mean, do you anticipate that? Is that part of this regulatory certainty that you talk about?
Mr. Johnson, maybe we should have PCA just comment to Representative Hornstein's question.
I do have my own.
If you can give your version, and then we'll have PCA give us.
Everyone will have a version.
Yeah.
So,
Mr. Johnson.
Chair, the answer is no, we actually can't supersede federal law. That's not something we're allowed to do. What we can do is set up a program for how Minnesota will comply with the Clean Water Act, and this is one of the options that we're looking at. There is not a nitrogen standard right now, and PCA cannot start one until EPA finishes their work, which they have not finished doing. So this would actually let us start doing work on nitrogen if a community decided it was in their best interest many, many years before the federal government would be ready for a standard to do that.
Representative Hornstein.
No, thank you. I'd be interested in the PCA.
Okay. Why don't we have PCA come down? Thank you. Welcome. Welcome back. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Katrina Kessler. I am a professional engineer, and I'm the manager of the water assessment section at the MPCA.
Go ahead with your testimony, Ms. Kessler.
Oh, just to Representative's question about the Clean Water Act, just to thank Representative Fabian and others who have testified on this bill. We really appreciate the support we're getting for this idea. And to that question directly, the Clean Water Act actually anticipates using a technology approach in advance of a water quality approach. So historically, as we have tried to make advances in wastewater treatment across the decades, what you do is you first look at what is achievable with the available technology, and then you look at what is the water quality needing. And so this bill directly lines up with that in terms of nitrogen, because it's anticipating what is available now and requiring through the permits that people who take this incentive meet limits that are the best available and best achievable at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Kessler. Representative Horns.
Thank you. That's helpful. Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say that I thought about this kind of long and hard, and I think there's some real opportunities. If we keep the door open to those opportunities, including, especially for small communities, that they don't have to have a discharge. I speak of what City of Cass Lake did up in my district. And, there's no NPDES permit for them. They're growing alfalfa like you wouldn't see alfalfa grown anywhere in Minnesota. And so those kind of things are, you know, reusing. And looking at what Western Lake Sanitary District over in Duluth is proposing to do, harnessing energy and water reuse. So I think the door is open on this, or I suggest we leave the door open on this so that all the technologies can be made available, especially to small communities.
Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question. I'm reading the language in 210 through 215, and it talks about the day following the United States Environmental Protection Agency approval of a Minnesota Pollution Control Agency adopted total nitrate nitrogen aquatic standard. That sounds to me like Minnesota and the PCA are adopting some form of nitrate nitrogen standard, and I was led to believe that we're waiting on the EPA to come down with that ruling. There seems to be a little contradiction there on the nitrate standard.
Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that language is strictly related to the availability and the sunset. At this point, we are committed eventually to adopting a nitrate water quality standard to protect aquatic life, but at this point we are not ready to do that. The data are not yet available, and when they become available, we have to go through the administrative process that involves public notice. As Ms. Gauthier mentioned, it's all based on peer-reviewed scientific journals and research that has been vetted thoroughly, and that takes a long time. And ultimately, even if the science were available today, it would take years to do this. So we wanted to acknowledge the fact that our intent is to adopt a nitrate aquatic life standard, but at this point we're not ready. And so this bill looks at incentivizing communities who have to plan to anticipate planning for both phosphorus and for nitrogen, or phosphorus and nitrogen.
And Representative Hancock, further?
I'd be interested in Ms. Gauthier's answer to that as well before I proceed. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you. Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you. Pardon me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, MPCA, Representative Hancock. The language that you referred to, 216 through 220, refers to the offer of certainty. So what that is saying is, basically, this is kind of a one-time offer, and this is how long it will last. It will only last until either 15 years or the day after the point in the future, at some point, that we do have a standard and that the EPA approves it. The EPA approves all of our standards, right? They do that for every state that has a water quality standard, they approve it. So the sunset is on the offer. Once a city has, they opt to do this and they get regulatory certainty, that last sentence there on line, starts on line 213 and goes through the end, that says that the agreement, the certainty, stays with the agreement for up to 20 years. It's the offer that sunsets.
Representative Hancock.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and testifiers. I think there's certainly an advantage in having some certainty on regulatory, so I would approve definitely of that, of the bill in that regard. The moving object here is the EPA, and I guess my concern would be this: if the EPA approves the standard and then two or three years later comes out with a much more stringent standard, how is the is the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency at that point then willing to show some resistance to the EPA? And do they only show it resistance to those who have opted into this type of procedure, or do we do that to other municipalities that have not perhaps joined this? Everyone likes to know what the rules are, and I think the big elephant in the room here is the fact that the EPA sometimes changes the rules, and I want to know how the MPCA is going to react to those potential changes. Thank you.
Ms. Gauthier, any additional comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to answer that question. Yeah, so Representative Hancock, because we will work with the community from the beginning on what is their design, what is their engineering, we will work with them to build the best the possible reduction in nitrogen that they can do with existing technology. Therefore, if the EPA did come out with a number be more stringent than that, if the existing technology can't meet that stringent term, then under the Clean Water Act, the best technology we have. So because these communities have the best technology available, we are willing to say they are fine. They're fine for now. When that equipment wears out 20 years from now or whatever, then we would have to negotiate a permit with them with whatever the EPA has decided or has approved for us as a nitrogen standard. But the EPA, we're the ones that decide it. People here in Minnesota, scientists here working and living and from Minnesota. EPA approves what we do, but EPA doesn't come in and tell us what the number is for Minnesota. We get to look at everything and figure that out and then ask them if that number is
thank
just
you.
To clarify.
Ms. Kessler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to add to that, we have been talking to EPA about this proposal, so they are aware that this is something that we think is right for Minnesota right now. And those conversations are continuing, and they are constructive.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure that I understand. So we're talking at this point only about two nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus, in this area of having some certainty.
So should there
be other developments, for example, some of the things that we're learning about, some things that are in our water system today, endocrine disruptors, antibiotics, all of these sort of things, those are not affected by that. This, so as those standards continue to grow or be clarified, we're not saying that we won't do anything about them and that those are in a separate category. Is that correct?
Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and Representative, this proposal for the incentive is strictly related to biological nutrient removal. But to your question about endocrine active compounds and contaminants of emerging concern, what we do know is that facilities that have this type of treatment in them do have less of those types of endocrine active things in their discharge. That is just an added benefit for in removing nitrogen. Oftentimes you also get removal of those types of contaminants.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's good news, and I'm just wondering if we could, I'd like to see whatever information you might have on that so that we can, you know, be vigilant.
If you could provide that to the committee, and then we'll get it distributed. I have two more people have questions. Representative Fisher, then we'll wrap up with Representative Hansen, and then we'll move on to one more bill today, members.
Thank you, then
we have an amendment to adopt it. Let's take the questions first. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question I have, there's two of them, is one on the nitrate standard. When I hear that being referred to, I'm not hearing any numbers or anything else, and it's you're kind of referring. To me, it sounds like it's a blank number right now, and it's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around that, is not knowing what that number is. Is there any kind of idea? Is it, you know, real close to where current standards are? Is it, say, 100%, you know, 50% less, 80% less, to help give an idea of what this new technology is able to do?
Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the biological nutrient removal has been in place in other parts of the country and in other parts of the world. So we are aware of what is achievable. Because Minnesota is a colder place and this is a biological process, there's arguably some assumptions that we need to look at to determine what can be achievable in this climate. And that would be determined by the MPCA permit engineers as we go through the development and the engineering review of the plans and specifications. However, that said, we know that biological nutrient removal over time can meet between 5 milligrams per liter and 10 milligrams per liter nitrate nitrogen or total nitrogen, and the current standard to protect drinking water is 10 milligrams per liter nitrogen, so it's comparable.
Follow up, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other question I had is in terms of the technology that's being cited here, if there's other technology that does better than this, are we then ruling that out for that being considered as part of this? In other words, I feel uncomfortable just specifying one technology and then find out there's other opportunities to give us better bang for the buck and not being able to have the cities take advantage of that in the same type of situation.
Ms. Kessler.
Chairman and Representative, biological nutrient removal, as Ms. Gauthier referred to, is a suite of technologies. All technologies that remove nitrogen are biologic. So nitrogen is not removed through other means. So any technology that is removing nitrogen would be eligible for this because it would all be based on biological activity.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that this bill is being held over. If the author wanted to get the amendment into the shape that he wanted to, I think we'd support that. I think some of our members are intrigued by the idea. Others are skeptical. And having this out in the light of day to look at, I think, is important. My concerns are, does this create a magic shield that really, or a publicly funded invisibility cloak on regulations that are required to protect water quality? So I think having a discussion and an open discussion about this is important, and holding it over in the shape that the author wants is good.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the issue of technologies, I'm assuming that you research across the country and around the world to see what's out there, where we already know the outcomes, where we know it's the best.
Ms. Kessler.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, we have been working very closely with communities around the country, as well as with the researchers at the University of Minnesota. There was a wastewater think tank that was funded several years ago by the legislature that was a great partnership that led to the research and the understanding surrounding this. So I feel like we have a good, solid understanding of what is achievable at this point.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Hausman?
Well,
go ahead.
As we traveled to the state in past years, and we were always seeing these systems and realizing, I mean, there was a lot of repetition of types, and we always wondered, is there something out there? Is anyone going a different direction? We occasionally heard stories from European countries that were having good outcomes, and so I just wanted to be assured that we were looking out there if somebody else has discovered something we haven't, because they are expensive investments for these small towns.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Representative Fabian, you'd like to move the A1 amendment. I see you're adding or industrial permit holder in a couple of spots. Do you want to explain that, or do you want Ms. Kessler? Or go ahead, Representative Fabian. Fabian moves the A1 amendment. Please explain it.
And this would not be the magic shield amendment either, so just so we know that. I'd like to ask Mr. Quillis and Mr. Chair if it would please you. I believe that we do have a slight oral amendment because this terminology was left out in a couple of places in the bill, but we'll work on that as we go through here.
Mr. Representative Fabian, please state your oral amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Coulis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Welcome.
And working with Ms. Taylor and putting together the A1 amendment, I think I missed two spots to reference industrial permit holder on page 1, line 19, after municipality. I think would be industrial permit holder, and on page 2, line 5, there's another reference to municipality, after municipality, and insert industrial permit holder. Those would be my only
Mr. Close, let's just wait. I want to make sure Ms. Taylor's got it. Are you actually asking for it to be noted twice on the same line, the line 5? It's already in the amendment that way.
Page 2, line
Ms. Taylor, I'll figure it out.
Be after the second municipality.
Yeah, okay. Ms. Taylor, when you're ready, I would like you to restate the oral amendment when you are ready. Take your time. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, what you would want to do is on after line 1.3 of the amendment, insert page 1, comma, line 19, comma, after municipality, insert or industrial permit holder. And then on line 1.6 of the amendment, after insert both.
Okay. Any questions to the proposed oral amendment to the A1? Thank you. And we understand the implications. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. All those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That amendment's adopted. Representative Fabian, your bill as amended is laid over. The last bill of the day, members, if the PCA wants to come forward first. Commissioner Kadelka, do you want the Dakota County to come? Or is it just you? Or no, you've got Mr. Mueller. Why don't you present the bill quickly, and then I believe Dakota County is here to speak to the bill. Welcome, Commissioner, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the time. My name is Kirk Kadelka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I want to thank the chair for authoring the bill for us. This bill is a genesis comes from this committee. Just a real quick recap, MLCAT, the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust, is a collects revenues from a portion of solid waste fees on disposal in the metropolitan area to help with the long-term care of these facilities when environmental or human health is impacted. The change here is a simple one. What it does is adds one sentence that says the account must be managed through the State Board of Investment for long-term gains. Currently, the fund is invested in money market accounts with MMB and along with all the other dollars. This makes a change so it's similar to the closed landfill investment fund CLIF, so it's invested for long-term and higher returns. This cannot be done by a state agency unless explicitly authorized by legislation, and so that's why we're adding this sentence. The difference is anticipated rate of return of about 0.5% in a money market in good times, and over the life of the closed landfill investment fund, we've had a 4.5% return. Some years really well, you know, 20-30% gains. Some years bad, you know, 25% losses. But overall, it's been a 4.5% gain. And that's what this bill seeks to do, is to have more resources there when needed in the future to help with the long-term care of these facilities. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm available
thank
for
you,
any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Kadelka. Thank you for that explanation. I'd like to move House File 2841 be passed and moved on to state government finance. That's my motion. Mr. Mueller, did you want to add any more to Commissioner Kadelka? Thank you. Commissioner Workman, why don't you come forward if you have some comments from the county? Welcome, Commissioner. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Liz Workman. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner, and I am also chair of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, also known as SWIM Club. And I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and as I always like the opportunity to talk trash with you, Mr. Chair. As many of you know, MLCAT is the landfill cleanup fund funded entirely by landfill fees. And as Mr. Kadulka stated, the fund receives a quarter of the proceeds from fees on solid waste disposal in the metro landfills. The current annual proceeds from these fees are estimated at approximately $800,000 per year, and the account is not currently invested. The proposed language will address this issue, and both Dakota County and the Swim Club support it. I would also like to just speak briefly on the current fund balance, which is approximately $8.2 million. Missing from this balance is nearly $14 million that was transferred out by the legislature for other uses over the years. When these transfers were made, the legislative language accompanying them was, it is the intent of the legislature to restore these funds to the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust Fund as revenues become available in the future to ensure the state meets future financial obligations under Minnesota statutes, section 473.845. Without these funds being repaid, we will not be able to meet the obligations for post-closure care for these landfills, two of which are in Dakota County. Thank you again for your support, Mr. Chair, clarifying that this is a fund that should be invested, and for considering transferring back into MLCAT the nearly $14 million that was previously shifted for other uses. Thank you,
Commissioner, for coming in. We appreciate your testimony. Seeing no further discussion. Oh, Representative Clark. Yep, Representative Heck. I'm sorry.
I think it wasn't.
Well, I got some other testifiers, too, I guess. Well, Representative Clark.
I can wait till the testimony.
Commissioner, is anybody else from Dakota County want to testify?
Want to? Probably not, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have a couple questions. Representative Clark.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I wasn't listening well enough. We're talking about House Bill 2841 still, correct?
Correct, and that's to require MPCA to invest the money in long-term return as opposed to short-term investment money market like it has been for years. Commissioner Workman addressed the bigger global discussion about previous money was taken out of MLCAT and has never been repaid, even though there's language in law that says the intention is to repay that fund, and she's bringing to the attention of this group that she'd like $14 million.
Mr. Chairman, I'm all for repaying it. That's not my question. My question is more about the part that says long-term gain through the State Board of Investment. What I'm wondering is there's certain discussions going on right now in the State Board of Investment that have to do with making sure that the investments we're doing there are responsible in more than just profit, that they're also responsible for the good of the state. And so some of those might be long-term gain. I don't know. I guess it just seems like such a broad wording, and I might urge that we consider maybe a little bit different wording on that.
Okay. Comments well taken. Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think there's a bill floating around for some help on the Andover landfill, and I don't know if it's a bonding bill or what the request is, but I'm wondering if we can use this fund for that cleanup. I don't know if, Commissioner, if you're aware of that bill and what the situation is there. Just briefly.
Commissioner Kadulka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the question. The WDE landfill that is being referred to is a bonding request through the closed landfill program. The closed landfill program and MLCAT are two separate types of programs meeting two separate types of needs. And so the MLCAT is not something that landfill is eligible for given the state law. These dollars are set aside for four specific closed demolition landfills in Ramsey, Dakota, and Hennepin County, the two open sanitary landfills mentioned in Dakota County, and then Pig's Eye in Ramsey County. Those dollars have not been used for those projects. Historically, the project you've talked about, we have used bonding dollars in the past, and that's why the agency proposals to continue using those funds in the future.
Representative Hackbarth. Okay, thank you for that clarification. Anybody else want to speak to the bill? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a good, soon-to-be bipartisan bill.
Good. Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of sending House File 2841 on to state government finance say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The bill is on to state government finance. Members, we are adjourned through the long holiday weekend, so everyone have safe travels. If you're going down to southeastern Minnesota, be careful. We had 8 inches of snow in Hastings last night, so thank you. We're adjourned.